A legal education means you will learn to speak in a new language. You will be taught to achieve insight into the world around you and to sharply question what you know.
You can't handle the truth!
Welcome, everybody, to the new and improved Comedians at Law Presents Only in Law School podcast. I am Matt Ritter, and with me is Kevin Israel.
What's going on, Matt? Welcome back.
Welcome back. It's we took a couple months off, so for those of you who are Comedians at Law fans, it's going to be more awesome stuff. We moved over to SoundCloud because it's just a better platform, but it's going to be more great stories and great interviews with people. And for those of you who are new to it, our Only in Law School listeners, Kevin and I are both former law students turned comedians, and you know, we're going to tell you funny law school stories, and we're going to talk to a bunch of interesting law students, some SBA presidents, some professors, and then just some people who made it out of the grind and are doing cool stuff, you know, so you can listen to this and sort of get some ideas about maybe, you know, how to make a good career out of the terrible choice you made of going to law school.
Yeah, yep.
I thought we could start by telling them maybe some quick background about ourselves. I don't know, maybe you want to give them a quick law school story for yourself.
Well, as you know, I went back to law school when I was 30, so I went back as an adult, which was a pretty giant mistake, but here I am. And I went full time, so most of the kids that I was going to school with were in their early 20s, and I was 30.
You were the old guy.
Yeah. So I was the old man on campus, which everybody.
Where did you go?
I went to Hofstra Law School on Long Island, and everybody reminded me of my age on a daily basis. And I went back to law school thinking, great, you know, college was a lot of fun. Let's go to law school. Let's see how that is. And if you're listening to this and you go to law school, you know that law school and college have nothing in common. And it was a harsh reality that I learned on the first day when I realized I was supposed to have read about 200 pages combined for my classes, and I had done none of it. I thought it was suggested.
A little light reading.
Yeah. I was the first person, the first day of class, to be called on in contracts to discuss a case, and I had no idea what she was talking about. And it was a terrible and yet symbolic start to my law school experience.
That sounds about right. I went pretty much straight out, actually. I went to UPenn for law school, and I sort of thought it was an extension of college, and nobody talked me out of that notion, actually. I treated it like it was an extension of college, which maybe wasn't the best way to handle law school. In fact, you know, some of the professors were really cool. We had this one professor, Tyson, and I don't even securities regulation, is that a class? That's a class, right?
Could be. I didn't take
it. So I took that, and he was so cool that he would go out and drink with us. And so for some reason, I just thought that I had crossed the threshold between, like, professor and buddy, you know? And so I didn't study for the midterm at all. And and he flunked me. And I went up to him afterwards, and I'm like, hey, man, what's the deal? What's the deal with this, bro? He's like, the deal is you had the lowest score I've seen in quite some time.
But let's go grab a beer afterwards.
Right. I mean, he still wanted to drink with me, but he's like, I think you're confused about what's going on here.
The status of our relationship.
Yeah. Our relationship was professor-student and professor who likes to drink a little bit.
Yeah.
But I learned my lesson real quick. So anyway, we'll give you guys many more stories throughout our time here. I also wanted to mention a couple of things. One is we've been working on a web series. We just shot some the first couple episodes this weekend. It's called Study Group, and it's just about a funny little study group in law school. So check out our site for that. And we want to hear from you guys on the site.
Yes. You listening to us, if you're in law school, if you're freshly out of law school, if you've been out of law school forever, we want you to contribute. Our Only in Law School website, which is easy, onlyinlawschool.com. We're constantly posting up new content from around the web about law and law school and the law school experience. But we want it from you. We want it fresh. We want it new. If you guys have a great law review video, or if you just, you know, if you just want to, you know, take a selfie video of yourself complaining about class or the guy across the library from you who's snoring, do it. Send it to us. We'll put it up. You might become famous. You might be able to avoid this whole law nonsense.
I can pretty much guarantee we'll put it up if it's interesting.
Yeah. If you spend the time to send it to us, we'll probably spend the time to throw it up on our website and at least see if it can catch on. Yeah, and who knows?
You know, and we've got like 20,000 Facebook fans, you know, so, and we've got another, you know, 3 or 4 on Comedians in Law. So we've got a big following. So if you want to get, famous in your law school real quickly, yes. Hit us up.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Share us with your friends. If you're listening, tell your friends about it. And then if you put something up, you can become the cool guy on your law school campus because you went viral on Only in Law School.
Yeah, I mean that's law school famous. It's it only takes like 5,000 hits to be
exactly. Well, listen, everything in law school is a bit scaled down.
You had a famous video, didn't you? You went viral.
I had a video about the gym, Gym Clowns. It's called. It had 2.5 million hits.
Wasn't there a highlighter one too? No.
There was a highlighter. You know what? I think that was taken down. I went to look for it, and it's not on YouTube anymore. I should probably contact the girl that did it. That was incredibly embarrassing, and I'm glad it doesn't exist anymore.
I think my claim to fame in the law school world is I shot a web series called The Bottom Rung, which you guys should check out if you're ever thinking about doing doc review.
Yes, very funny.
This video will make you not this web series will make you not want to do that. So you can check that out on YouTube. But we're also going to give you guys good stories. You know, we always look for funny legal stories, so I think we should just jump in to the two really funny ones we picked out for this week.
Well, I think you mentioning doc review takes us right into the first story that you found, talking about the jobs coming out of law school.
Brutal.
Because why would you do doc review, Matt? You came out with a law degree. You can go be a lawyer and make hundreds of thousands of dollars, no?
Yeah, not if you're looking at these numbers. I mean, if you're looking at these ABA job numbers. I mean, yeah, for those of you who don't know now, Kevin is working in government, and I am working as a reality TV producer. But before that, I had to scrape by in doc review, and I moved out to L.A. And if you look at these ABA numbers, that's probably the best bet for you.
Yeah, it's not looking good.
I mean, you know, they try and juke the stats, but Above the Law boiled it down. 26.8% of law school grads out 9 months were underemployed or unemployed. Underemployed meaning short-term or part-time or non-professional, you know, so like Starbucks, barista.
Ugh, that's miserable.
Yeah, that's 27% of law school graduates are either unemployed or working as a barista or something along those lines.
And probably, I don't know if they include those numbers here, but probably most of those 27% are paying off debt.
Oh, they didn't even, I don't even want to get into the debt numbers because that would, I don't want anyone, you know, offing themselves because they're listening to this podcast. But
if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably pretty entrenched in law school. So we apologize, but these are the grimy facts.
Yeah, they're in too deep. You know what I thought was interesting? So a couple schools are doing is they're hiring their own grads to sort of, A, help their grads, but also juke their own stats.
Yes, exactly. I've heard of that. I've seen that happen, actually.
Yeah.
And that's sad. It's a sad thing. Well, and a lot of the schools are, you know, playing fast and loose with the numbers as it is. You know, law schools have always liked to play games with the number. You give a bunch of kids scholarships to start, and then they make it impossible and a possible GPA to keep your scholarship.
Yeah, that's a good little trick. You know what I thought was interesting, though? The big law is actually on the uptick, it said at the bottom of the article. Firms with over 500 people, they increased hiring this year.
Well, that's great. So if you're in the top, you know, whatever percent of your class, and you're planning on going to one of those meat-churning, just, you know, sweatshops of a huge law firm, you'll probably be able to get a job. But for the rest of us, you're screwed.
Yeah, so basically, you're screwed. I mean, basically, you're screwed. That's the moral of the story. But I think the flip side is, once you know that your life is ruined, enjoy it. Have fun.
Yeah, you know what? Once you're at the bottom, you can only go up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, embrace the pain of knowing that your future is bleak.
Listen, you could become a stand-up comedian and start a legal comedy troupe and tour the nation and... you know, acquire one of the largest legal comedy websites, and you know, the empire begins for you. Or maybe that's just us.
Listen, you could work in politics. You could be a reality television producer.
It's the opportunities are endless.
Yeah. So look, you know, look, no, but in all seriousness, if you're a law student and you're listening to this, you know, read this carefully and say, I'm going to do something about it. Don't just expect things to be easy breezy when you get out. Be proactive.
Yeah, and I, you know, and bouncing off what Matt just said, in all honesty, if you're in law school right now and you're in your second or third year and you're a little concerned about your job prospects, try to be creative. Find, you know, have a plan B, because the law firms aren't coming to you with their open hands and their big offers like they used to back in the 90s and the early 2000s.
Yeah, could you be a dog walker?
Listen, every dog needs to be walked.
Yeah. Could you bake cupcakes? Could you open up a cupcake shop?
Cupcakes are very big right now.
Very
man.
Big. I feel like cupcakes are a little 2010 or 11. Maybe there's a new thing. Cannolis? Are cannolis
the,
big?
The cronut. The cronut is huge.
Cronut stands. I like that. You know what you should do is, if you're thinking about doing it, you start off by opening up a cronut truck right outside of your law school. I think that's what
you're doing. There you go. You'll probably be sued by the cronut people, but hey, you have a law degree, so you can handle that.
Exactly. Should we move on to this next story? This is even funnier.
Yes.
So Katherine Heigl, who I hate, I don't know if you like her.
Wait, you know what? Before we even start the story, do you think Katherine Heigl's hot?
You know what? If I didn't know her personality, which seems to stink to high heavens, then yeah, I probably would have said yes. She's very voluptuous. I like it.
I just never, you know, they always try to put her in these roles where she's supposed to be this like hot chick, and I just never found her hot.
Yeah, she's got a bit of that snaggletooth, but I dig it.
So ladies, if you're out there and you have a snaggletooth, tweet at Matt Ritter.
Yeah, I dig her a little snaggle. It gives her a little character, but then you hear all these horrible things about her. I mean, she's talking smack to Judd Apatow about how he's such a piece of crap, and it's like, hey, he cast you in one of the biggest movies ever. Like, come on.
Yeah, and that kind of launched her career. Yeah. Well, she was also wasn't she in that TV show
Grey's Anatomy? And then she Grey's left Anatomy, early, yeah. Thinking she was going to be a big movie star that didn't quite pan out.
Whoops, not so much.
Yeah, oops.
So what's our girl Kat up to?
Apparently, she's doing a lot of shopping at Duane Reade.
Who isn't? If you don't live in New York City, Duane Reade is a CVS or Walgreens type pharmacy, kind of a sells everything in New York City.
It's like that Us Weekly segment, Stars. They're just like us.
Yes, and apparently she shops at Duane Reade, but something happened.
Yeah, so she was at Duane Reade, and somebody snapped a picture of her, and Duane Reade kind of took it and ran with that. And they wrote on Twitter, love a quick Duane Reade run. Even Kat Heigl can't resist shopping at New York City's favorite drugstore.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing Miss Heigl was not too happy about this.
No. Not only was she not too happy about it, she sued them for $6 million.
Are we going to say this is reflective of her just being a kind of a pain in the ass? Or is this reflective of her career and she needs the money?
You know, it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, I don't know. I imagine she has a good nest egg from that Grey's Anatomy run.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think this is more of her being a pain in the ass, because a lot of celebs probably could have done this already.
I do feel bad for celebrities in one instance, because they can never have privacy, and with like paparazzi and everything, there's always people taking pictures of them. But on my other hand, I think that these people get to get to live a dream life. If that's the payment that you have to make, is that you don't have a lot of privacy, well, you kind of knew you were getting into that.
Yeah. By the way, there are places that deliver groceries now, I think, too.
Yes. Yeah. There's websites that you can go to that offer that service.
She shouldn't have to get her herpes cream herself at Duane Reade.
Oh, that's that. Well, that's a new rumor that Matt Ritter just started.
Watch, she's gonna sue me for $10 million.
Maybe she was getting Plan B, man.
What do you think she was getting, Plan B? Is that what you think?
Who knows? I would guess she's probably getting
cigarettes.
Probably really boring.
Cigarettes.
Whatever she was getting.
I'm guessing cigarettes.
So you think she's a smoker?
Oh yeah.
All right. Duane Reade sells everything. I mean, she could have been getting socks.
You think she's getting those really crappy like gym socks, the white six pack?
A real quick law firm story. I used to go to the gym before I would go to work. And I was getting dressed at the gym one day, and I realized I forgot socks for work. And I was horrified, because it was my first week working at this firm. And I walked all over the city looking for where to get socks, and I ended up getting them at Duane Reade.
For your first day of work.
What's that?
For your first day.
Yes, it was in my first week of work.
First week.
And for the record, I still have those socks.
Of course. I mean, who throws away socks?
Yeah, well, and they last. They were durable. If you want some good, cheap socks, Duane Reade.
Yeah, but they don't have that kind of like, you know, the lawyers like to wear, that's like their eccentricity. Lawyers like to be eccentric in their socks.
Yeah, these were not
that's where a lawyer shows his personality at his, yeah. on his feet.
That's it. Around his ankles.
Yeah, it's like, oh well, what does he do? You met a nice guy? What does he do? Oh, he's a lawyer. Oh, that's great. Is he kind of boring? No, his socks are so exciting.
You can see his socks. He's got stripes all over the place.
he's got Disney characters on him. He's so fun.
So what do you think? Is Heigl's suit gonna, is it gonna,
well, you know,
hold
I
water?
Mean, I think it's interesting because, you know, the argument is that like, you can't just commercially jack somebody's likeness for your own commercial benefit. And it sounds like they only use their Twitter feed for commercial use, Dwayne Reed.
Right.
So she might have a case. It's hard to say. It looks like Eric Gardner of Cohen Gardner, who writes for the Hollywood Reporter, the THR Esquire, who I always go to for my entertainment law stuff. He had a good counter argument. He said, look, Dwayne Reed could argue because of such the bad taste people have about her in their mouth that Dwayne Reed would never use her as an endorsement.
Right, right. She's,
she's cancer. She's not, like, she's the worst.
Well, you know what? And this is it's funny that this just happened, because then we had the other issue with Big Poppy taking the selfie with the president on his Samsung phone.
No more selfies.
And yeah, the White House freaked out because it looked like President Obama was endorsing Samsung, which that just seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah,
that,
it's getting crazy. But apparently there's the Lanham Act, Section 43, there's an issue of how the drugstore's followers interpret the tweet.
Oh, so are they interpreting it as just fact or as an advertisement?
Right, because I wouldn't know, to be honest. Just reading that, I would think, maybe Katherine Heigl's endorsing Dwayne Reed now. She's really fallen on hard times.
You know, can I just throw a real shot in the dark and say, who the hell is following Dwayne Reed on Twitter?
That's only people that they've paid to follow them.
Is anybody going, oh, you missed the Dwayne Reed tweet? They have a sale on maxi pads today. You got to go check it out.
That's got to be the only reason, right? If there's some sort of discounts that they tweet on there.
Yeah, and I was going to say that Dwayne Reed should have paid us for a plug, but now they will probably not pay us.
You know what? But
plug.
If they tweet this podcast, we will sue that. No, we won't sue you, Dwayne Reed. If you tweet about this podcast, we'll be very happy.
You just had half of a podcast about you.
Yeah.
Mr. Dwayne or Mr. Reed.
Yeah. Named Dwayne Reed because it was originally on the corners of Dwayne Street and Reed Street in New York.
Is that true?
Yeah. I just found that out last year.
Matt Ritter, just a font of knowledge.
Yeah, I didn't even have to Google that one just now.
Wow, just pulling that out. You didn't have to use your memory. Just
pulled it out. My law school memory strikes again.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. Well, listen, we should definitely keep track of this case for you, only in law school. Comedian.
Yeah. Oh, you know what we should do? We should give a shout-out. You know, we always like to give a shout-out to some of our new followers, since we have so many in the past few months. We'll go to Only in Law School and look at some of our new followers. We've got Kate Cessna, Zahn, Batty Patty, Dilla, Afik retweeted us, Craig Smith, Jacob Mosher, Steel City 314, Jim LeCamp, James Vandersluis, I like that name.
Yeah.
Nobody Knows, Brian Kupferberg, Alina Sklar, and Azahin. That's from Only in Law School. And then over at Comedians in Law, we had Penn Manch's family, Chamber Solicitors, Lena, the CCB Nevada Black Caucus. We've got the St. Petersburg Law Foundation in Russia. Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
That could be an international incident, having something from Russia following us.
Oh,
right,
man,
now.
I know, right? Are we gonna get in trouble over there?
I don't know. We can only hope.
Yeah. Ken Behi and my fellow Dube. So those were our new followers. Thank you, guys. And you know, we want to hear from you guys, so should we give them a hashtag to tweet in at, or OLS, you know, just OLS?
Yeah, hashtag OLS or hashtag legal comedy.
Yeah.
And
just tweet us, what do you think about Katherine Heigl? Do you like her or hate her?
Yeah, yes. Do you think, exactly. Just do you like her, or do you think that this is just one more example of her being a pain in the ass?
Yeah. All right, cool, man. So up next, I'm going to do an interview with a super agent who went to law school and is now killing it out here in Hollywood for Gersh, Jeff Greenberg. So that's
nice.
Very exciting.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the podcast. I am very excited. We have a very special guest at the podcast center. Sometimes we do it Skype. Sometimes we do it with a next door neighbor. This guy is a law student turned Hollywood power agent, and he's here with us to talk about that. Welcome to the podcast, Jeff Greenberg.
Hi, thanks for having me, Matt. Excited to be here.
So First off, he was wearing a suit when he came over. Because do you guys always wear suits?
Yeah, 5 days a week.
See, that's amazing to me. I mean, when the law profession is even in, why is it so formal?
You know, we have people trust us with their careers pretty quick after meeting us, and I think that you just want to be as formal as possible and buttoned up. And I think that, you know, you just want to... No one in LA wears suits, as you know.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy it because...
You can identify
sort of,
you guys.
It's my calling card. Yeah. It's like, that guy at the bar wearing a suit must be an agent.
You know what? It's funny you say that. I think there's something to that. Like, oh, okay, I trust this. I don't know if you remember that episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Where the guy goes, what is this, Casual Fridays? Oh, do you take my business casually?
No, it's true. You want people buttoned up about your business, and it's why, you know, we're professional on the phone. You know, all of our CCs and email correspondence are pretty, you know, we format it so it's super regulated and, you know, formal looking.
Yeah, but on the flip side, I mean, it seems like you guys are, you know, like a fairly, not like uptight, you know, group agents in LA. You know what I mean?
It seems
like a pretty cat. Do you think that sort of the legal profession has lost something by not being so formal in the attire? Do you think that
I love wearing a suit. When I put on my suit, I call it my suit of armor for the day. So like when I dress up in my suit every day,
yeah.
I like to, I'm dressing for battle.
You feel powerful. You've got your armor on.
Yeah.
So let's backtrack for a second. So tell everybody, we'll get into the agent stuff, but just quickly where you went to law school and how you sort of got to where we are now.
So I'm from Connecticut, and I did my JD MBA at Quinnipiac. I got my, I took the bar and passed in New York and Connecticut. And while I was awaiting my results, my parents said, you've always dreamed of going to LA. You got to get stop living at home. Why don't you go get a job? And I said, no one's going to hire me until I pass the bar. And they said, why don't you try LA? So I moved out to LA, applied to all the agencies because I always wanted to be an agent. No one wrote me back. Week two, applied to all the agencies in the mailroom. No one wrote me back. Week three, I physically walked around and handed my resume to the agencies. No one wrote me back. ICM wouldn't even take it. And it only came from going out and meeting people and networking that I had interviews and offers at UTA, CA, and William Morris. And I started in the William Morris mailroom in the trainee program after 7 interviews.
So you just pounded the pavement until somebody said yes.
Pounded the pavement. And my my grandfather would call me up and say, well, did you tell him that you went to law school? I'm like, Grandpa, there's a guy next to me that went to Harvard Law School. There's kids that went to Georgetown Law and practiced corporate law for years and now are assistants. So, I mean, you really start at the bottom and work your way up. And it's another grad school, being in the mailroom and being on a desk and being in the training program.
Did you feel like... I'm better than these guys because I did go to law school. I mean,
no.
The other people in the mailroom are
no,
just kind of like, we're all equal.
The mailroom was made up of some of the smartest, most interesting people I had ever met. And it was all people that loved television and had gone to all the best schools around the country and truly were there because they loved it.
So I don't think a lot of us, probably most of the people listening to this podcast, don't have a great visualization of what the mailroom really is. I mean, I think... Most of us probably have an impression from Entourage of Lloyd.
But isn't he
already past the mailroom, or is it, like, worse than that?
Lloyd was past the mailroom. The idea is to get on the desk. So Lloyd was on a great desk, Ari's desk.
Right.
You stay in the mailroom until a desk opens up or until, you know, the mailroom's a great spot. I used to call it camp.
Is there an actual mailroom? But they don't use it anymore the way they used to use it, right?
When I was in the mailroom, which was only like 8 years ago, we were still printing out a lot of scripts and handing out scripts, and you deliver interoffice mail and checks come, and you know, the trades, a lot still comes through the mail.
Yeah. For you guys.
Messenger service that we use.
Because you still have the scripts printing out everywhere. Everybody's still printing out the scripts.
People are now moving to the iPads.
Yeah.
You know, over the past 3 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, until the writer's strike in 2007, you weren't allowed to email a script to, like, a network. You had to messenger the script.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That was something they negotiated in the deal.
No. But that was just the turning point.
Oh, okay.
Because the economies were changing when, you know, networks weren't making any money. And before, and agencies aren't making any money in our department during the writer's strike. And before, they didn't want to pay for printing, and they would have the agencies do it, and the agencies just started sending emailed scripts.
So... Like, the hours, are they as horrific as like, a first year? Like, if, like, first years, you know, always complain about their hours at a law firm. Is it worse than that? What is it? I mean...
As an agent or in the mailroom?
Mailroom.
Well, you want as many hours as you can because you're getting paid hourly and your,
oh, okay.
your wage is pretty small.
Oh, okay.
So
is there OT? Is it, like...
There's definitely...
Okay.
I mean, you know, there wasn't William Morris at the time.
Yeah.
I think, you know, each agency...
So it's like a doc review gig, basically.
Totally.
You gotta, gotta crank that OT money out.
Exactly.
And so you do that until a desk opens up. Are people down in the mailroom for varying amounts of time? Like, so like somebody could be down there for 6 months and another guy could be down there for 2 years?
Anywhere from like 3 months to, you know, if you're in the mailroom for more than 8 months, you're not meant to be in it.
Okay, so like that's it. It's like you're kind of like the guy in Office Space who's like got his own, like, forget his name, but it's like you just leave him down there. And they're just like,
well, they probably cut him pretty
You're not quickly. Getting called up to the majors. You're like a lifelong minor league.
If you're not getting a desk, they don't want you.
Yeah.
Because the mailroom's there to feed the pool that needs the desks.
So you've now been doing this for 8 years. How did you choose, you know, your lit agent? How do you make that choice, right? I mean, because there's features, there's you know, television, there's talent.
There's actors. Comedians, there's all types. Music. I knew I always loved television, and TV writers are who drive the medium. Actors don't drive TV. Directors don't drive TV the way they do movies. Writers drive TV, and writers are the ones that create the stories that go on for 5 seasons and 100 hours of television. And I wanted to work with people that were going to create television.
And what's sort of like the coolest, I mean, tell, you know, I guess I still, you know, I want to give them a glimpse of like what this is like for anybody listening who's like, I want to do that. What is a day like for you?
So a day starts with breakfast where...
Like every other human.
But I'm having breakfast with an executive from network or a client or a potential client or a lawyer or, you know, it's a business breakfast.
Okay.
And that happens 4 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
I get into the office. I'm in pretty early. I try to be in between 9 to 9:30. That's after a breakfast. And, you know, you just start manning the phones and going through... It's like every other job. You're battling emails and talking on the phone.
Yeah.
You're trying to... Depending on the time of year, you're either developing new shows with your clients and pitching them to the networks and the producers, or you're out there finding the jobs for your clients and getting them lined up to get them ready for the jobs when they do open. You're anticipating needs, and you're on the phone doing that, responding to email. And then you go to lunch, and lunch can take up to 2 hours.
Yeah,
because lunch half the week is in the valley at a studio. If I'm meeting a studio exec from Warner Brothers, they're not coming to Beverly Hills to see me.
For those of you who are not living in LA or unfamiliar, I mean, it's like, you know, it's in a 40-minute drive wherever you go.
Yeah, so you're driving over the hill to lunch. You have lunch with an exec where you're, you know, pitching your clients, talking about jobs. And then you're driving back. The good news is you have an assistant, so you're rolling calls the entire time.
What does that mean? We got to tell them, because that's I still don't know what that means. I mean, I've been here like 5 years. I hear people say that. I don't know what the hell that means.
I as an assistant, I became a master at rolling calls, but rolling calls just means you line up the calls for your boss while he's not in the office. So it just goes from one person to the next.
You mean like when he gets back in?
No. While I'm in the car, I'm talking to Matt, then I'm talking to Jessica, then I hit all the clients and all the executives.
You call them.
Well, my assistant puts me through each of them.
Okay.
So I'm not looking at my phone.
Right. So the assistant has this, like, okay, I'm going to call this person at 4:10. And then they wait till you get off and just call the next person?
No, not exactly. We're just trying people, seeing what we can get. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So what is that? Like, the afternoon is the time that people answer their phones or something in LA?
We keep a massive phone sheet. And I'm sure other, you know, I'm sure regular, normal lawyers do this too. Maybe not. So... You're constantly doing either leftward or incoming calls, and you know, I'll leave word in the morning for 30 people, and I'll maybe get 20 of them back in the afternoon, and 10 of them, maybe 5 of them will call me and I won't be available, or I'll be another call, so then we'll just keep trading calls for a few days. And sometimes you just send emails, but you want to talk to someone to pitch your client and to fully explain why you've got the right person for the job.
So I want to ask a question that I think is elusive to the legal communities. What is the hierarchy there, right? So because everybody in law school kind of knows, hey, okay, I have options. I can go to a big firm and try and work for 8 years or 10 years and make partner. If I don't make partner, then they put me in that, like, of counsel weird box, which is kind of like, get out of here. Or I get out after, like, 4 or 5 years max and jump over to in-house or whatever, or just make an escape to something else. What does the hierarchy look like for an agent?
Well, once you're an agent, the idea is just to have clients that pop.
Okay.
I mean, you know, there are partnerships and different agencies deal with that in a different way, but you just want to have clients that, you know, command the biggest salary so you can command the biggest salary.
Right.
And you want to have clients that are creating and that, you know, are respected around town so you're respected around town. You are only as good as your client list. And, you know, I view myself as a curator, and each of my clients, I know, reflects on me, and I know the things that I do and the other people I represent reflect on them.
What's, like, the coolest experience you've had just... being an agent, just something that people here would be jealous of?
I mean, anytime I see a show that I love, often I can email the creator right after and tell them my thoughts on it, and they get right back to me. And a lot of
that's
them
pretty
I know.
Cool.
I mean, someone that, you know, when I was in law
school. Dude, come on, you got to name drop a little for us here. Just give
well,
us
was,
one name.
When
drop
I was in law school,
something.
I was watching Arrested Development.
Okay.
And the fact that, like, Mitch Hurwitz knows who I am and takes my advice for who he's hiring, either as his development exec or for his shows, blows me away.
Yeah, that's going to geek some people out
and,
here, for
you know,
sure.
He's just someone that, as growing up, just the fact that he, you know, if I hadn't saw him on the street, I would have been excited.
Yeah.
And now he says hi to me. That
yeah, that is really cool. I mean, that's definitely like high up on the people that I would be excited about as
and
well.
One of my favorite shows, The Good Wife. You
I
know,
love The Good Wife.
Robert and Michelle King. I'm emailing them after every episode, and we talk.
We have to talk to them right now. I mean, we got to talk to them about what happened. I mean, why did they do that? Actually, you know what I really respected about them, and I'm sure a lot of people watch The Good Wife that are listening to this podcast. I think that's like the first time that I've seen. I'm sure you probably have a better handle on if that's true or not, but they really explained their thought process to their fans.
Yeah.
Is that a first time you think that anybody's really gone to that length? I don't know if you guys know this, but they killed off, I don't want to, spoiler alert, well, you should know by now, they killed off one of the main characters, and it's a very big deal because he's beloved, and, you know, a lot of people were stunned, and they actually took to the internet and wrote a, you know, well thought out and, you know, explanation of the whole thing.
Well, I think, I mean, you know, you see Talking Dead now, you see talking Breaking after Breaking Bad, you know, you got the creator talking to the people and on Twitter. People are, you know, the creators of the shows are now beholden to the fans a little more.
You think we demand that now?
There's now a dialogue where...
You think we demand that, though? I mean, it's almost like... Do you think we're getting to the point where, like, you need that? Like,
I think the viewing public is demanding answers, and the network, the creators can't get away with doing things without having a true reason behind it anymore.
Interesting. And you think for all shows, I mean, it seems like some... Maybe, like, cable seems like they still... Some of these shows still have, like, their... I do what I want. There's a couple of guys that kind of have that, like, I get to do what I want, and you'll, you know, I don't know, like Game of Thrones or something, for example. You know, it seems
yeah,
like...
Yeah, but, you know, we were watching Game of Thrones on Sunday,
yes.
And we talked about the recasting of one of the characters, and, you know...
People were pissed. They were like, what the hell?
But maybe that was because people were angry at who initially was
pissed.
Yeah. I don't know that I'm not involved in that show, and I don't know the reason for the recasting,
yeah.
But there it could have been because of fan outcry. It may not have been.
On the flip side, what is sort of the thing that drives you crazy about what you do?
I love what I do. I can't believe I get paid to do what I do. I mean, as a kid who thought, and you know, I would have probably been pretty happy being like a state's attorney,
yeah.
Which is what I thought I was going to do. That's where I summered, state's attorney in the U.S. Attorney's Office. I can't believe that I get to help make TV. It's such a freaking dream.
Yeah, it's fun out here. I mean, then let's give these guys something to aspire to. How do they do what you did? I mean, give some advice to the law students listening to this. How do we do it?
I mean, I moved out here not knowing anyone. So it really was just being out here and meeting people and putting, you know, the leather to the pavement and getting out there and you know, finding out who you know. I mean, it was friends of friends of friends.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like... I didn't even have one connection to the agency.
Yeah.
I literally had zero friends in LA when I moved here.
Do you keep in touch with people from law school?
Small handful.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not like business school where like everyone sort of comes up together and moves to New York together.
Yeah.
No one was moving to LA, especially from my school in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And, you know, people went off to small law firms and stuff like that. And, you know, our friends on Facebook. And for, you know, the first few years we kept in touch with people.
Right.
Out in LA and I'd see them, but not as much.
Nobody made it out as like an entertainment lawyer or anything like that.
Unfortunately, not from
law school.
I wish.
Yeah. And so I we always give people a chance to promote something at the end. So I don't know if you have any client shows you want to tell people to go check out or something.
No, just watch TV.
Just watch TV. Just the general watch TV. Well, thank you so much, Jeff Greenberg. And I think you probably just made a bunch of law students decide to just move to LA and roll the dice.
Not a bad choice, guys. The weather out here is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a good life. Well, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thanks, Matt. Happy to be here.
Thank you guys for listening, and stay tuned for another great episode next week.